One more time. Okay, we're up to Divrei Hayom, Perek Hey Pasuk Yud Ches through Chav Beis. We're going over the Metzudos and the Rashis. Okay, so in the Metzudos it says the Pasuk Yud Ches Min B'nei Chayil. There was a collection of men from the three Shvatim moving God and Chas Yeshev Menashe that together joined forces to wage war against the B'nai Yishmael, these four nations, the nation that we call the one that we had before, the Ha-Hag-Ri-Im. And now in Pasuk Yitzhas, we make mention of three more nations, Yitur, Nafish, V'Nodav. If we remember, when we learned yesterday that back in the beginning of the parak, when we mentioned this war before, only in regard to B'nai Reuben, it did not make any mention of the other three nations, Yitur, Nafish, V'Nodav. So that would seem to indicate that this is a different war. I think that's really the Pashtus. The war that's mentioned before is a different war that took place in a much earlier point of time. That was the time of Yehoshua, and the war mentioned over here is the war that's taking place during the time of the census, which was Yeravam the second and Yosam. So Pasuk Yud Ches Min B'nei Chayil, all of these people from these three tribes were warriors. Rotzam Min B'nei Chayil Hisasu Anashim Yotzei Tzava Harum Lotzei Spatzor Ulchama. All these men, these 44,000 and change, they were all roy for war. V'chol Shimahem V'chol Asher Hayu Imayim B'Ezrasam. Everyone that would help them. And then the Pasuk says V'anei. The words of the Pasuk on Pasuk Chaf are Vayiozru Alehem, they were assisted Vanatar Lohem, and Hashem answered their prayer. Kibil Asar Tifilosam. The word Asar is a word for prayer. Asar means you take a pitchfork and you throw up the grain. You throw up the grain and it causes you separate the kernel from the chaff. And that is what the straw from the stubble. Yemahapich asar is a tool where you're able to overturn. The Gemara Chazal is, why is Tila called asar vayetar? Because through the koyach of prayer, you are mahapich from ro l'toiva. Just like when you take a shovel and you throw it into a pile of grain, you overturn it. You turn it upside down, and by turning it upside down, the wind blows and changes, moves things around. Okay, so we mentioned before that what was the prayer that they were referring to? These people, these 45,000 people, were all children of B'nai God, Reuven, and Chatshev, Menashe. The parents did not even recognize them. Their parents during these 14 years, well, that's the question, if it's the same war, or it's a different war. If we learn that it's the same war mentioned in the time of Yehoshua, we're going back to that period of time, then it means that those children were not recognized by their parents, but when they came back and they saw the war and they saw that the one side of the battle were praying to Hashem, they right away recognized that indeed these are their children. Hashem answered their prayer. So first it says they captured from their possessions. Then we specify what exactly they captured. So here the Metzudas makes at this point, I don't wonder how can it be that so few people captured so many. How could it be that 44,760 Yichub Shvi Neo Elef, they can capture 100,000? 45,000 can capture 100,000. Ki Balvur Shenoflu Min HaHargim Chalolim Rabim. Very powerful. Libel Hamusar. War is not based on skill, it's based on siyata d'shmaya. Purim, the whole history of Israel. The whole history of Israel. Even talking about the modern state of Israel. The modern state of Israel, all the wars. There have been seven. I was recently preparing for Tisha B'Av, so I was trying to go over all the different inyanim about Tisha B'Av, sorry, probably to talk about people who died, like Kiddush Hashem, defending Eretz Yisrael, victims of terror. So since 1948, according to one of the Israeli websites, there have been seven major wars in Israel. Can you imagine? War of Independence, War of Attrition, there was the Six-Day War, Lebanon, it goes through all of the wars. Seven, what they classify as wars. And then they go on to say, and this doesn't include numerous armed conflicts. There are conflicts. There are conflicts between the Palestinians and Israelis. You can't call them necessarily wars, but they're serious business. And how many soldiers have died? Thousands. The numbers are in the thousands. And that does not even include people who've died through terror, acts of terror. That's not war. That's just on terror. And the numbers, they have an official count since 1920, before the state, obviously. So they have a number. They have like 3,000, almost 3,800 people on record were killed in Israel since 1920 until today through acts of terror. And that
massacres
is not,
like the 1929.
Right. Acts of terror. But it could also include what happened in the state itself. I don't know that on the Olympics. I think it includes what happened in the state itself. In the state itself, over 4,000 people. And that, of course, does not include how many thousands and who knows, tens of thousands were injured, wounded, and lives were disrupted. Rachman is a person on a bus here, a bus that blows up, so he didn't even get killed. But can you imagine this person the rest of his life, the damage, whether it's physical damage, psychological damage, to his family, to him, it's just a horror. So here it's making a point. When they talk about, okay, as I mentioned, the seven wars, they study war throughout the world. West Point, there are different colleges that specialize in courses of war. We all know that when it comes to Israel, they always shy away because Israel's wars don't make any sense. The wars of Israel are not al derech hateva. Al derech hateva, the Israelis should have
somebody
lost.
Someone said, if you don't believe in miracles, you're not a realist.
You're not a realist. Good line. The victims, the enemy was terrified and they surrendered. Okay, tachtehem b'mokem ha-hag re'im. Okay, pasuk of gimel, yashu ba'aretz. That's already the next section, which we did not yet learn. Okay, let's see the Rashi. Rashi says, pasuk yitches, b'nei ruven uvgod, v'chatesh ha-minash, b'nei ha-chayil, k'loimah, kulam niskapsu, v'osu mulchama im ha-hag re'im. They all gathered together, did war, v'yitur v'nafish, b'nav shal yishmol heim. As I mentioned yesterday, that these are also nations, yitur nafish, and seemingly, I don't know about the next nation, the other nation of Nodav, were children of Yishmol Pasukah, Vayazru Alehem, Ki Hashem Ozram. They were assisted. Vayazru Alehem, they were assisted. According to Rashi, Rashi learns that the assistance came from Hashem. Other commentators learn Vayazru, we mentioned this yesterday, means they were assisted by their brethren on the west side of the Yarden. The Bnei Yisrael, the other 10 Shvatim, the other 9.5 Shvatim, they came to their aid when they sent out a distress signal that they are outnumbered, and they were assisted. That's how other commentators learn, but not like Rashi, Hashem's system. And v'chol she'imohem. So here it's very interesting. This is very interesting what it says. Rashi says this turned into a world war. Because the pasuk says, remember, it was primarily three shvatim against four nations. Ruvain, Gad, Chatzi, Shevet, Menashe, up against the Hahagriim, Yitur, Nafish, V'Nodav. And then what happened? Pasukov, Vaye Ozru Aleyem. We'll learn not like Rashi, who joined the 2.5 shvatim, the other shvatim. People came to help them. And what does that mean? It wasn't only the Hahagriim. It turned into a world war. Other nations joined the war. That's how Rashi learns. It started off with the Hahagriim, and then it says here, Rashi, Umos Acherim L'Ozram. Other nations in the world joined forces with the Arabs to fight against the 2.5 tribes plus the other tribes that joined in the battle. So it turned into a major world war. That's what it says.
It sounds regional to me.
It's regional, but it says Umos. How big was the world in those days?
Well,
the civilized world.
There were small nation states.
The civilized world wasn't all that large. Okay, you go out, who knows, you go out east.
But the names of these okay. Other three, we've never heard of them.
Right,
before.
Because they're wiped out. Yitur Nafish V'Nodav. It says there was a Yitur Nafish V'Nodav, and now it says V'Chol She'im Ohem.
They were basically tribes.
Okay, but then it goes on to say V'Chol She'im Ohem, and Rashi says these were not just tribes, these were nations. Umos Acherim Le'Ozram. So you'll tell me that in ancient times, a nation was 50 people. Maybe, maybe. Like a city. What was a city? 30 people was a city.
Except
a king. You were a king if you had 30 servants. You were already a king. You had a scepter, and you had a crown, and you had a kisei, a throne. You were already a king, yeah.
But, all right, but B'nai Yishmael, of course, is a larger
entity. Yeah, okay.
Probably from all over the region, because okay. They were scattered.
Right.
What was doing at the time of Yehoshua in America? Do we have any...
Sorry?
What was doing at the time of Yehoshua? Kibush Aretz. Were there any human beings living in America? Were there
yes,
any human beings...
Yes. I don't know.
We don't know. It's too far back.
Even that far back,
the time of Yehoshua, maybe. What was doing in Australia? How did they get there?
Nothing that came.
Great
kangaroos. Even today, the basis in the Middle East is still tribes and clans. Forget about it.
Okay, that's right. Nothing changed. The Taliban and these all.
No, the Arabs themselves, they have big families.
Right. Afghanistan, what's going on there? Nothing changed. Everything is the same. 3,000 years, the world is the same. Okay, that concludes the Rashi. Let's go to the next section. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Uvnei Chatzis Shevet Menashe. Yashu Be'oretz Mi Boshan. Now we've pretty much concluded Reuven. We've concluded God. Right? And now we have to discuss Chatzis Shevet Menashe. It's just a little strange that in the middle of discussing God, we mention this world war, or this regional war, as you want to call it, this regional war which included all three. And that was the second mention, because when we discussed Reuben, we also mentioned this war. But now we focus on Menashe, Uvinei Chatzi Shevet Menashe, that lived in on the east side of the Yarden, Yashvu Ba'aretz, they lived in this particular land, Mi Bashan, starting from the area of Bashan. Bashan was Sichon, Og Melech HaBashan. It was Og's land, which Moshe Rabbeinu conquered from Og, out until Baal Hermon, until this place called Hermon, Usinir, and the location called Sinir Vahar Hermon, and in Usinir Vahar
Hermon. Another name for
Har Hermon. Okay, or another slope, a different side of the slope. It's the same mountain, two different slopes of the same mountain. Vahar Hermon and Har Hermon, Hemaravu, in these two locations, in Sinir. And in Har Hermon, they multiplied. The Ela Rosh Beis Avosam, here are the names of their forefathers. V'efer, the Vav is part of the name. We had that already a few times. The first time you heard this, it's still strange. But after this concept is repeated multiple times, it's not so strange. But he's saying the Vav, the Mitzvah says the Vav is part, Havav, V'efer. Vav Yisera. Oh, okay, so the Vav is also, okay. Okay, here he says that the Vav is Yisera. Oh, Kain Shemo, or maybe the Vav Bevav Uchumahu Rabim. We have many examples. So the Mitzvah here tells us in the Mitzvah Sion that it's
not,
it depends. No, but that's his first interpretation. Then he says, maybe the Vav is part of his name, and you have many examples of this. Yeah?
Maybe they left out a name. If they left, let's say there was a name Chayim.
Right, so that's another approach. Right, so you're following the approach that Ezra, he did a cut and paste job. But didn't take care of the grammar. Ezra, that's how some really learn. That's how some learn. Ezra had in front of him different scrolls of Yichus, and he had to put together different Hayamim, and he only wanted to include certain families, and he didn't want to rewrite anything because things were written with certain degree of holiness or significance. So he just cut a piece from this scroll, cut a piece from this scroll, cut a piece from that scroll, pasted it together, and even though it doesn't make any sense because your extra vowels and sentences don't flow. That's right. They're not meant to flow. I'm just cutting and pasting from different documents that he had in front of him to select things that he felt were important. So again, here we have the names. Here are the leaders. The Eli Rosh Beis Avosam, the Efer, the Yishi, the Eliel, the Azriel, the Yirmiyah. That's not the same Yirmiyah, obviously. Yirmiyah did not seemingly come from Menashe, and it was a much earlier point in time. V'chol Davia, V'yachdi El, Anoshim, Gibor Chaldi, so all men which were warriors, Anshe Shemos, by the renown. Roshim, Levei Savosam, heads of their families. Pasuk Chav Hei Vay. Now what happened? Here we have a very frightening story. Vayim Alu Belokei Avoseihem. They transgressed. Vayim Alu means shinui. It means to change. It means they change themselves. They decide they no longer want to be loyal to Hashem. They want to be loyal to idols. They... Right, that's what Mol means. Mol means you attempt to take a property that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and change it for yourself, to change its use, status from holy to chol, to mundane. So here it means they transgress. It's a borrowed term. They transgressed against Hashem. Look how we'll say him. Vayiznu, they went astray. Acharei Elohei Amei Haaretz, the gods of the nations. Asher Hishmid Elohei Kim Mibnehem, which Hashem destroyed from before them. Vayyar. So what happened when they transgressed? Hashem woke up. Hashem punished them. This is typical of Sefer Shoftim. You sin, you'll get punished. And after you're punished enough, you do tshuva, you come back. And then, yeah?
It could be from the air to stir up.
Right, vayyar means to stir up or to arouse. Vayyar Elokei Yisrael es ruach, the spirit. Paul Melech Ashur. We learned this last 2 days ago. There were four major kings of Ashur. They were the major player of the time. We think today, you know, we think about Mitzrayim, we think about Bavel, Dal Malchios, we think about Modai Paras, Yavon, and of course Edom, right? Today we're living in Galus Edom. But if you go back to the time of Yehoshua, time of the first Kibush, who was the major Ummah nation in the world? Ashur. That was the world, that was the major nation, Ashur. And who were the four kings? Pul was one of the earliest ones at the time of Yehoshua and a little bit later. Tilgas Pilneser, or the other version was Tiglas, and Tiglas Pilneser, then Shalmin Esar, and then Sancheriv. And with Sancheriv's death, that was the end of really the status, the stature of the kingdom of Ashur. But they were a major, they were the world power. They were the America of the day. And that's what it says here, Vayar Elokei Yisrael Esruach Pul Melech Ashur, one of the first, the earlier kings of Ashur. The Esruach Tig Tilgas Pil Ne. Pil Neser Melech Ashur, that was the second king. Vayagleim Laruveni Vlagodi Vlachati Shevet Menashe, and they were exiled. Vayiviem Lachlach Vichovor Vihora Unahar Gozon Ad Hayom Azeh, and they were exiled, they were brought to these locations. This was part of the first wave of the Aseres Hashvatim. There were three waves. This goes back to Sefer Yeshaya. There's a pasuk there, I should have looked up in the Torah. Rav Schwab always quotes that pasuk. In fact, it's quoted in the Hagdama to a Sefer. He really makes a big issue about this. There were three waves of exile for the Aseres Hashvatim. When Melech Ashur exiled the 10 tribes, he did it over a period of time. And it wasn't only him. It started with his predecessors, Tiglas, Pilneser, and so on. Three waves of exile. This, I believe, was the second. According to most opinions, the first wave were the Shvatim along the Mediterranean on the other side, which included Naphtali and Zvulun. Zvulun, I think Naphtali also is over there. I gotta look on the map. Along the Mediterranean.
Yeah, but they were the early ones who went into Poland.
They were the first ones. They were the first ones. No. But there are different opinions of which went first.
Right.
I think one approach is that what we're referring to over here was the second wave. The second wave. Some say no, they were the first wave. But it's interesting that he first knocked off the extremes, the Mediterranean. They were exiled first, and then he exiled those on the east side of the Yarden, and then he went in for the northern side of Eretz Yisrael, and even Yehuda. When he exiled the 10 Shvatim, he also exiled a good part of Yehuda and Binyamin. Only Yerushalayim, what?
He made escape difficult. In other words, he boxed
the center in. He did the extremes first, and then came the center of Eretz Yisrael. And the only thing that was left when they got really big was Yerushalayim. That was the last holdout. That was the last holdout. And Al Pi Derech HaTeva, they would have been destroyed only because of the miracle where all of his servants died that night. So here we have another record of this second. What's important, this pasuk is important because it positively indicates that it was one group. That these three tribes, well, everyone living on the east side of the Arad, they were exiled together. And here it says, Ad Hayom Azeh, they did not return. This is a machlekes. Did Yirmiyah bring back the Aseres HaShvatim? So this is machlekes in the Gemara. This pasuk seems to say no. This pasuk says they were exiled. Vayivim lachlach v'chavor v'hara. When the har goes on, we don't even know who these places are. Maybe we do. Ad Hayom Azeh, they never returned. Okay, let's see over here. The Mitzudos and the Rashis for this little section of Menashe. Menashe starting with Pasuk Chof Gimel Yoshvu Boretz. So the Chatzi Shevet Menashe, they lived in the land. Which land are we referring to? Rashi explains Heimo Chazru Min Hamulchama the Yoshvu Biartzam. After the war was over, and they conquered what appears to be Iraq. That's what it says. They keep on going east, east, east until the area where the Hagriim, Yitur Nafish, and Nodav, they return back home. They return back to Bashan. Ulam hispashtu mi Bashan ad Baal Hermon ki hem aravu. They did extend to some degree because they were many. V'hayitzar lahem ha-mokam asher yashuba b'rishayinu v'lezeh hispashtu l'shem s'mokam acheyhem asher holchu mizeh l'mokam ha-hagriim. It could very well be that's part of what it means, that they expanded just like their brethren Reuven and Gad expanded out east to the place where the ha-hagriim lived. They also expanded and settled in these lands as well. Pasuk of Dalet and Sheshemos. Now we list the people from Menashe of renown. Rotzuloymar Yiduim Bishmosam Lugodel Hachashivos. They were very well known. Pasuk Chafhei Asher Hishmid. They transgressed and they followed in the ways of the idols of the nations which Hashem destroyed. Ko'oimer, this means to say, for Hoyelohem Lohovin, Im Elohim Hema, Madu Elo Yitzilu Es Amam. So here the Mitzudos is saying powerful mockery. They should have realized that if in the past the Jewish people, Reuven and Menashe and God were able to conquer that nation, these nations, their neighbors, why didn't their God save them? It must be they're not real gods. So why were they so foolish now to worship those gods? Obviously, they're not worth anything. Those gods could not save the nation which they conquered. So if they can't save the nation which they conquered, they're not gods. So why are you now worshiping those gods? This was an act of foolishness. What?
That's the
Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is foolish. They don't know from history. I once heard Cosby. Who was the woman who the Nazi Zimri had relations with? Cosby Basur. Why was she called Cosby? Because Cosby comes from the word Kozov. It's a lie. The Yetzer Hara. A name captures your essence. Captures the essence. This was a woman which he could not control himself. He followed after her. He wanted to have to sin with her. It's a lie. It's all a big lie. The Yetzer Hara makes you feel if only you will have, only you'll have this, you'll be able to have this woman, you'll be able to indulge. Then you'll have everything. It's a big lie. You'll do the Avera, and then you'll realize it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth anything. And it's a lie. And that's exactly what it says here in this pasuk. Let's go further. Pasuk Chaf Vav. We have over here these strange places. Unohor Gozan. What in the world is that? Samuch Lina Unus. Near Linahar. Doesn't mean they actually lived in the river. Okay, we don't have any records of cities built underground in rivers. It means near the river.
Along the river.
Ad Hayoim Hazer, Ratzalem over here, Yehinam Odom Sham, Ki Loi Chazu Bebinin Bayis Hasheni. They never returned. They never returned even during the time of the Bayis Sheni. They remain living over there. Who knows? These are the 10 lost tribes who probably will be shocked one day to learn learn, the Mashiach will come, and Leon Neville will tell us the whole true story of history, to learn that probably almost the whole world is Jewish. has Jewish blood.
That's what they say about Europe.
What?
That's what they say about Europe.
In South America, in Murano.
In America, in Mexico, we're shocked. The whole Mexico, they all come from...
And New Mexico also.
And who knows what's going to happen in Canada. Who knows the Australians? Who knows the Russians? Who knows? Who knows where all these people really come from? The influence of the Jewish gene is so dominant. Wherever they go, they take over the country. Okay, but unfortunately...
Were they exiled to the north?
We don't know. There's so many mysteries.
It's Assyria, isn't it?
Right. That's the north of Israel.
Ashur is north, right? It's northeast.
Southern Turkey and northern Syria.
So it would be Assyria, Turkey, along out. So why would we consider, when Ezra came back, he's coming from the south, from Babel. He's bringing them up.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't bother, he's not going to be in the north to bring people.
No, Ezra didn't try to bring anyone back. Ezra had made no attempt whatsoever to return the Ten Shvatim. There's a medrash that Yirmiyah did. Yirmiyah tried to bring back, and according to one opinion, he was successful to some degree, at least some of them. We have a tradition that today in Klal Yisrael, among the Shomer Torah Mitzvos, there are descendants of every single tribe. Hashem would not allow it to be that any tribe would come to an end. We just don't know who's who. The day will come, it could even be the Alder HaTav. The time will come when technology, there'll be technology of it. Take a test, a DNA test, they'll be able to discover incredible things. Where you come from. And then when you'll go and you'll take everyone's DNA, computer will be able to tell you how everyone is related to each other. It's not so far-fetched. We can understand.
They already do it.
Yeah.
They have it today.
But I don't know if they do it today. There's such detail. I don't know if they can take my DNA and take your DNA and it can tell us exactly the whole Shalshela Sayichas. They don't have the technology yet that can give us extreme detail. It's pretty good. They have basic ideas of families, of where you come from, which part of the world, but who knows what's down the line, the technology.
The major study that I know of is about Kohanim.
Yeah. They have a dean.
And even that, you wouldn't decide a halakhic question of Yichus through that.
That's becoming a very big question. Like, where do you draw the line? Where? Why not? Well, if it's a fact, if DNA is a fact, why can't that be a determining factor for a yichus, for halacha, to get the first aliyah, to do the duchani?
Why? Because you don't know if it's a cholol or anything like that.
I don't know if it's a cholol, so let's say we'll have more technology. Technology will advance to the point where, like you say, you can look at someone's DNA. And again, you'll take everyone's DNA, and the more information you'll have, you'll be able to trace generations. So maybe halacha at that point would acknowledge, and this is a very big dilemma. These all technology is a very big issue. Okay, let's go further. So we have over here in Pasuk Chaf Hey in we have until they lived along the river. Ad Hayoim Hazeh, we mentioned they never returned. Okay, that concludes. Let's see the Rashi Pasik Chaf Hey. Vayiznu Achare Elohei Ame Aretz Asher Hishmid Elohim Bibnehem Pisroin. What does this mean? The interpretation is as follows. Heim Zonu Achare Elohei Ame Aretz Ve'ezaam, which nation? Asher Hishmidom Elohim Bibnehem. You know which nation? The nations which were defeated. It's one thing if you want to go worship the gods of the nations which we did not defeat. Okay, there must be something. If we were unable to defeat them, it must be they have something. Their god must have some power. But they were foolish. They worshiped the gods of the nations, the losers. That's the foolishness. And this is the foolishness. And they did not pay attention. And therefore, if the God was unable to help them, if the God could not help the losing nation, so certainly this God cannot help the winner. Can't help Klal Yisrael. But that's, like we said, the foolishness, the trap of the Yetzer Hara. Now, the word Vayimalu, there's the Medrash, it's the Gemara. The Gemara says, Ein mal ela shinui. I told you this before. V'cheinu oimer ish ish ki siste ishtoi u mo'al abo mo'al. a woman transgresses against her husband, she exchanges her husband for a different man. She changes her loyalty. So you see from that passage the word mal means to change. So Gemara Masechet Me'ilah, and here the Gemara actually quotes this pasuk.
So it has both meanings. It has the meaning of exchanging,
yes,
betraying.
Betrayal. Well, it's the same idea, because when you betray, you exchange your loyalty to something else. Okay, so that concludes. That concludes. Then there's one more medrash. The medrash says, okay, this. Let me read you what it says here. Vayaglem laruveni v'lagoli v'lachashim menashe. So the medrash asks, why? Why did this happen? Why were they the first to be exiled? So the answer is, Atamot say b'bnei God b'nei Reuven shall you ashirim. Rabbi Mayevsky mentioned this to me last 2 days ago. They were extremely wealthy. They cherished their possessions. This is what the Medrash Rabba says. Okay, this run of the mill. Lefichach galu techila mikol hashvatim shenemar vayaglem leruveni vlagodi vlachashem nasho migam lohem. Who is the cause? Al shefrishu atzma menachayim b'shvil kinyonam minayin b'mashakas v'tarav mikne rav hayolam l'neivim. So the Medrash says the reason why they were the first to be exiled was because of their love for their money.
That was the initial reason they stayed.
They separated. One thing led to another. Because of they cherished their possessions, they lived on the west, on the east side, and once they were separate, they were cut off from their brethren, they were easy prey, they were an easy target for Melech Ashur to send them into exile first. Rabbi Meir told me a beautiful vart. He told me that, does this mean to say that only Reuven, God, and Chatz Yishev and Menashe, well, not Chatz Yishev and Menashe, that Moshe assigned them, but Reuven and God, only they had Mikne Rav. The other 10 Shvatim did not have Mikne Rav. So the answer is no, everyone had Mikne Rav. It's just that Reuven and God paid attention to the Mikne Rav. They all had.
They let it cloud the decision. It's the wording, I think, in the passage.
Yeah.
Those things first.
That was the complaint. Moshe Rabbeinu, it was their priority. Not to say that anyone else had anything less. Everyone else had the same amount. It's just that we won't worry about it. We have a lot of meekness, and we'll find a solution. We'll have some type of artificial feed for our animals. They don't have to have the best pasture. It wasn't an issue. Their chiba to come into Eretz was so great, they did not pay attention to the problems of their meekness. Reuven and God, unfortunately, did pay more attention to their mikneh, and that's why they suffered this fate. Okay, now we conclude. So now we have concluded Reuven, God, Chatz Yishev, and Menashe. Now we go to the next tribe, the tribe of Levi. Now Levi, from Levi comes Kohuna. Okay, Moshe, Aaron, Miriam, Kohuna. I have here a fantastic chart. I was going out of my mind looking for the Sefer, because I cannot learn Divya without the Sefer, and I couldn't find it for 2 days, and I finally found it this morning, early in the morning before davening. I thought there's one more place I did not look, and sure enough, there it was. But by the time that I found it, it was too late for me to make a photocopy, so let's just run through the Pesuk very quickly, and tomorrow, Bli Neder, I'll make the photocopy, and we'll go over it very quickly again. So here we go. B'nei Levi. Now we come to the children of Levi. Who are the Bnei Levi? Gershon, 3 children. Okay, just try to picture this in your mind. 3 children. Gershon, Kehos, Umirari. Okay, next. We're only going to be Miyaches, the middle child. Okay, the middle child here gets... Normally the middle child gets a raw deal, right? The oldest, the oldest.
Middle child syndrome.
The baby, he's the baby. The baby is spoiled. The middle child is forgotten about. But here, Kahas gets all the attention. Uvnei Kahas, we ignore the oldest and the baby. We focus on Kahas. We have Amram, Yitzhar, V'Chevron, V'Uziel. We have here 4 children. Okay, now, in this case, we are going to favor the oldest. Amram. Amram was the oldest of Kehas's 4 children, and he gets all the attention. Uvnei Amram. Who are Bnei Amram? 3 children. Aharon, Umoshe, Umiriam. 3 children. Aharon, Moshe, Miriam. We know Aharon was the oldest, and Miriam was the second. Miriam was the oldest. Miriam was the oldest. Aaron was second. Moshe was the third. For whatever reason, women, they...
They didn't believe in ladies first.
Back, exactly. What?
They didn't believe in ladies first.
Exactly. Better walk behind the line than walk behind the woman. I always say that to my sister. She doesn't appreciate it. Okay, you only can say that to your sister. You can't say that to your wife, right? Okay. Uvnei Amram, Aharon, Umoshe, Umiriam. Uvnei Aharon, who were the children of Aaron? So again, here we favor the first. We're only focusing here on Aaron. We're not going to talk about Moshe at all. Okay, Moshe is out of the picture. And Miriam is out of the picture. We really discussed Miriam in great detail, at least midrashically, in the beginning of the Sefer, when we went into all the different names for Miriam. She married Kalev and her children. Miriam really became a member of Sheva Yehuda to a certain degree, because she married Kalev, and from her came Malchus, and came all these good people. So she really jumped ship. She jumped ship out of Sheva Levi to Shevet Yehuda. Okay, so we're not going to discuss...
There's no restrictions.
No, of course not. And but we're not going to focus on Miriam. We're going to focus here on Aaron. Now we have a long list.
There's no land holding issue.
Right, exactly. Right. This is before this Mitzrayim. So now we go to pasuk uvnei Aaron Nadav Aviu uvnei Amram Adam Aaron Moshe Miriam uvnei Aaron. Now we go to Aaron, four children. We know there was Nadav Aviu, who unfortunately died. They died when they brought the age of Hashem. Elazar v'Isamar, and we have now Elazar v'Isamar. Isamar we're going to ignore. Okay, Isamar is not going to get any honorable mention here. That's it. We're finished. We're only going to focus now on Elazar. So look what we've done over here. Let's review just the basic steps. Okay, try to picture in your mind. We start with Levi. It's a very good Yichus brief, because when it came to Reuven, Gad, and Chatz Yishev and Menashe, very weak. We don't really know who's who. We just have these names, middle of nowhere, and we don't really know how they're traced back to their source. But here, we're pretty good. Levi, three sons. His middle son was Kohath. He had four sons. His oldest son was Amram. He had three sons. And the oldest of the three was Aaron. Aaron had four sons. And now we're going to focus on the third son, Elazar. When you see the chart, it's easy as pie. Okay, now we go to Laman. Elazar, Hoyludas, Pinchas. Now we're going to go through a long, long Yichus. All of the Koyhanim Hagedoylin. Okay, so Elazar gave birth. Who succeeded Aaron? We have to remember, who succeeded Aaron? Elazar, right? When Aaron went into Har HaHor, who did he dress in his place? Elazar, his son Elazar took over. That was a misa that Moshe was mekane. Moshe saw that Aaron's son succeeded him in his lifetime, right before he died. Moshe wanted the same thing. Hashem told Moshe, sorry, it's not going to happen to you. Instead, it's going to go to Yehoshua. I didn't hear it yet, but my sister listened on Tisha B'Av to Rabbi J.J. Schachter, and he spent a lot of time on this concept, contrasting Aaron and Moshe, the different types of deaths, and who succeeded who. There's a lot of that to compare and to discuss. But now we come to Elazar, Choylus Pinchas. Pinchas succeeded. He was the Kohen Gadol. Okay, we have a tradition. Pinchas was the next Kohen Gadol. Pinchas hoylides Avishua. He was the next Kohen Gadol. Avishua hoylides Buki, Ubuki hoylides Uzi, Uzi hoylides Zerachia, Uzrachia hoylides Miroyos, Miroyos hoylides Amaria, Amaria hoylides Achituf, Vachituf hoylides Sodok, Vitzodok hoylides Achim Moatz, Vachim Moatz hoylides Azaria, Vazaria hoylides Yochanan, Yochanan hoylides Azaria. Who is this Azariah? This Azariah the second. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is not Azariah the first, because we already mentioned in Azariah there are two Azariahs, right? And this Azariah, who Asher Kien, this Azariah was the one who was a Kohen Babayis, Asher Bono Shlomo Birushaloyim. Now, the problem is Wait, let me just make sure I told you which Azari. Did I make a mistake with the Azari holding this Yochanan? Right, this is the first Azari. This is the first Azari. The second Azari is coming a little later. Okay, I'm sorry. We're getting to the second Azari. There's another Azari coming at the end. But this Azari. Okay, let's just go further. This Azari, he was the Kohen, Babayis, Asher Bono Shlomo Birushalayim. Now, that's a very difficult statement because everyone was a Kohen. What are you talking about? Azariah was the first Kohen. Tzadok was the first Kohen of the Bayis Rishon. Okay, we go. Elazar, all of these people, we're going now through a long list. We'll count the numbers soon. But all of these people, they were all Kohanim Gedolim. Elazar was the Kohen in the Midbar. After Aaron died, Behor Hahor, Elazar was the Kohen Gadol. And then they went to Eretz Yisrael, and there was 14 years of Gilgal, there was 369 years of Shiloh, 52 years of Nova Givon, and then finally there was the Bayis Rishon, when the first one to be the king of the Bayis Rishon was Tzadok. But all of these people, they were all Kohanim Gedolim during the Tkufa of the Mishkan Gilgal, and the Mishkan of Shiloh, the Mishkan of Nova Givon. And then when you had the Bayis Rishon, the first one to serve as a Kohen was Tzadok. Tzadok was the first one that served in the Bayis Rishon. So what in the world is going on now when the Pasuk says...
He was the Kohen at the time, there was a Kohen Gadol. I think that's what the Rambam...
Are we going to come to different interpretations? Yeah, we're going to come... What does he say? There's the many interpretations, right?
He was the first one that was the new Kohen Gadol at the time of the Bayis. He was Tzadok's son.
Right.
But...
He was Achimatz's son. He was Achimatz's son. He was Achimatz's son.
Then he gets the whole thing that there was a big fight after...
After he died. Okay. Okay, so we'll get to some details in a moment, but the point over here is there's a very big difficulty in the puzzle which has to be addressed, and it is addressed by everyone. They're beautiful interpretations, but let's just keep cheshvan. We're now going down through all of the Kohanim Gedolim. Until we get to Tzadok, they were all Kohanim who served in the various Mishkanos. When we come to Tzadok, he was the first Kohen Gadol in the Bayis Rishon. Then he had a Sanachimatz. We assume he was also a Kohen Gadol. Then we have Azariah. And it says here, Achimatz holded as Azariah, Azariah holded as Yochanan, Yochanan holded as Azariah, and Yochanan gave birth to Azariah, that's Azariah the second. Right, Azariah the second. There are a total of three Azariahs. Azariah the first was the grandson of Tzadok. Azariah the second was the grandson of the Azariah the first, whose father was Yochanan. And then we're going to have another Azariah that lived right at the end of the Bayis Rishon. At the Bayis Rishon, the third Azariah. We're coming to soon. And this Azariah number two, we're calling, he was the who asher kien babayis asher bono shlomo birushalayim. Really? What about Tzadok? What about Achimatz? What about Azariah the first? And what about Yochanan? They also were kohanim in the bayis which Shlomo HaMelech built. So one answer given, we'll see others in a moment, is that he was the first one that stood up to defend the honor and the dignity of the kahuna. When the king, Uzziah, he went and he brought Ketores in the Beis Hamikdash. And he got Saras. That was Uzziah, and then his son Yosam took over for him in his lifetime. So who protested? Azariah. Azariah said, "How dare you?" Now, you don't go up against the king, because the king is in charge. Hachaim v'hamoros is in charge of life and death. So for the Kohen Gadol to challenge the actions of the king, the Kohen Gadol is putting his life in his own hands. He's risking his life, he's giving up his life, because the king will just say, "Don't question me, I'll kill you." Azariah risked his life. He risked his life to protest against the actions of Uzziah. How dare you offer Ketores when you are from Shevet Yehuda? You're not a Kohen, you have no right to do so. Therefore, the Pasuk says, he deserved the Kohun. Everyone else just had the Kohuna because they were a Yoyresh. They just inherited, right? They were an heir to the Kohuna. Very interesting. Yesterday, the new chief rabbi, It's very beautiful that both of the new chief rabbis are children of previous
ones.
I think that's a very nice thing.
Not everyone.
What?
Not what?
Questionable. They vote. Wait a minute. It was a whole political. It's a political.
150 votes and all.
150 votes.
And
who's already? Who's voting already? Who are the people that are voting? Who?
The mayors and some rabbanim. It's a mixture of a lot of things.
Politicians.
It's all politics.
Yeah, who picked 150?
Yeah. That's great.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I don't know. I shouldn't comment, but it is. It was striking to me. Interesting. Here you have. Rabbanim, who are the children of chief rabbis, I can't say it's a coincidence. You know, it's a very.
They still have the political clout of the parents.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's just an interesting thing that.
And the name recognition.
It's an interesting thing. People, I think, what I've read, so I didn't really read that much. People like it. Like it's like tradition. You know, yeah. It's there's something to it. It's not for nothing. The Torah says that the son inherits the father by malchus. Of course, a lot of politics. By the son inherits the position of the father by malchus and by kahuna. Kahuna, here we have over here all of these kohanim were serving. Well, kahuna does not necessarily, it's not Birusha, but often it was Birusha, as we see over here in these psukim. Okay, let's go further. V'yochanan Azariah hu asher kima b'ayis asher bono was built by Shlomo Yishlam. V'yolad Azariah es Amaria. Now we go further. Azariah gave birth to Amaria. V'amaria holed es Achituv. V'achituv holed es Tzadok. So this is another Tzadok. This is Tzadok the second. Okay, we have another Tzadok. Different with Tzadok holed es Shalom. Ah. And V'shalom holed es Chilkiah. V'chilkiah holed es Azariah the third. Azariah the third. V'azariah holed es Sirayah. U'sirayah holed es Yehot Tzadok. Now, Yehoi Tzadok never served as a Kohen Gadol. The last Kohen Gadol of the Bayis Rishon was who? Siraya. He was the last Kohen Gadol. And he was exiled. He was the Kohen Gadol when the Mikdash was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. And Yehoi Tzadok, his son, was taken to Bavel by Nebuchadnezzar in Golos. The Yehoi Tzadok... Now, by the way, who else, very important, who else did Saroyah have as a son? The very famous Ezra HaSeifer.
Right.
Now you know why Ezra listed all these people. Because Ezra is listing his own Yichus. Mm. Who here is writing this?
Ezra.
Ezra now is giving a very full listing of Shevet Levi. Now, to some degree, that's his yichus, because Saroyah was his father, and Yehoi Tzadok that we just mentioned was his brother. So that's interesting. Other shvatim, they got a raw deal. Some of them, they didn't get such a full treatment. Here, we're getting a very detailed yichus. It could very well be because he knew it. It's not a matter of he wanted to be fair. It's his own family, so he knew he was aware of the relationships. V'hoi tzadok holach, v'hoi tzadok holach b'haglos Hashem, es Yehuda v'Yerushalayim. He went with the exiles of Hashem. It's a very unique expression. The exiles of Hashem. Do you have such an expression anywhere else? Lamani shulach, we have in the Kinnus, Lamani shulach t'bavel, apostle, Lamani shulach t'bavel, that for your sake, Hashem says, I am also going to go into exile to Bavel. It's not just you going to go, I'm also going, the Shechina is going to accompany Klal Yisrael into exile. Here it's Beferish. It's not just some remes. Behaglois Hashem, the exiles of Hashem, es Yehuda v'Yerushalayim, Yehuda, when Yerushalayim biyad Nebuchadnezzar, Yehuda, I think the people of Yehuda, the people of Yerushalayim, biyad Nebuchadnezzar at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, what happened? Who did Yehoi Tzadok have as a son? The very famous Yehoshua Kohen Gadol. He was the first Kohen Gadol in the second bias. So we learned that. We learned about Yehoshua. And what was the very big question? Why was Yehoshua the Kohen Gadol? Should it not have been Ezra? Ezra was even greater than Yehoshua. Ezra was the uncle of Yehoshua. And the answer is, he wasn't there. He wasn't there. He wasn't.
He had a different function.
He wasn't available. He was learning with his Rebbe Baruch Ben Eriya. Did not want to separate. He was just not there on site, and that's why the next best was Yehoshua. Other commentators, they go further. So it's really a mendrash that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was painful Hashem to remove the Shalshelas Hayichus because Yehoshua was older. He was the Bukhar. And until now, the tradition always was that the Bukhar, the firstborn, is the one that takes over for the father. If Ezra would have been there in Eretz Yisrael at the time when they rebuilt the Bayis Sheni, they would have had no choice. They would have to have elected Ezra as the Kohen Gadol because he was so much greater. His prominence, his greatness was so much greater than Yehoshua, it would have to be. And that would have broken the line, the chain of going from father to son through the firstborn. Hashem, it was painful for Hashem to break this chain of going from to remove the firstborn. So Hashem made it that Ezra should still be involved with his Rebbe, Baruch Ben Eriya, so that who would be present? Yehoshua, and Yeshua who was the son of Yehoshadak. And Yehoshadak was the son of Saraya. And they continue the line of Yichus. Okay, so there's more to do here. This is the basic.
After Yehoshua,
because they even sold it to the highest bidder. Right. Afterwards, that came to an end. Correct. Okay, so there's a lot more going on over here. To Mirsham, tomorrow I'll give you the handout, and we'll do the Rash and the Medrash to elaborate on the Yichus of the Kohanim Gedolah.
It says holy, except Lamed side by you.
There must be. I don't know the answer.
It's holy.
Yeah. Vayomer Azariah Samaria. There must be. I guess it's a break because when we come to Azariah, we now focus on he was Asherkin Babais. There's something different about him. Okay, there's a long Rashi here. Amir Tashem, tomorrow we're going to do this in more detail.